Page 546. I think we're on Pasuk Tes. Okay, basically what we're learning in the middle of the Korban Oila, the burnt offering that somebody donated to the Beis HaMikdash, and we gave the whole introduction to Korbanos, the sacrifices, but basically they shecht it, and as we learned, a shechting did not have to be done by a Kohen. Any Jew who knew how to shecht, how to slaughter the Korban, was able to do it. The hides of the Korban Oila were not burnt on the altar. They were not holy, and therefore they were divided amongst the Kohanim of that shift. But the rest of the Korban Eila was burnt completely on the Mizbeach, with the exception of a few, the stomach, that we'll soon see.
Bones?
No, everything was burnt.
Even the skin?
The hide not. The hide of the animal.
Oh.
Not talking about, right, we're not learning about a chicken yet. That's a bird soon. In a few psukim. Now we're learning that by the case of the Korban Eila animal, the din was the hide did not have any sanctity to it, no kedusha. That was divided up amongst the kohenim, and they were able to do with it whatever they wanted. Okay, v'krivu b'nei Aaron kohenim esadam in pasukei, and they sprinkled the blood on the mizbeach, and then they said, v'hivshit asa'ela, they skinned it, v'nitach ha'isal and tzachah, and they cut it into pieces. Okay? Now, it means, like Rashi says, you can't cut the pieces into pieces, because the Torah says you cut it into pieces, meaning you don't cut its pieces into pieces. That's what we learned already. Okay, now in Pasuk Ches, on page 546, the Torah says like this: "Va'archu b'nei Aaron ha'kohenim and the sons of Aaron the Kohanim have to organize the head, v'sapod, and the fats." On the wood which was on the fire, which was on the mizbeach, which meant that when they had to organize it in such a way that they had to make sure that it didn't protrude from the wood. No, from the wood, it had to actually be on the wood. Now, Rashi says, why does it say, B'nei Aaron HaKohen? We know Aaron's kids are a Kohen. The whole time we know, but Aaron, children of Aaron are a Kohen. Why does it say B'nai Aaron a Kohen? So Rashi quotes in the Gemara, teaches us that the Kohen could only work when he's wearing the garments of a Kohen. And if he works without wearing the garments of a Kohen, it's invalid. It's not kosher avodah, it has to be redone. I mean, if somebody donated an oil, they would have to redo it, then it wouldn't be kosher as is. Okay, now in Pasuk Tes, that's what I get to. I think this is where we're up to. He should take the innards of the animal and the feet of the animal, yichatz b'mayim, and wash in water. And Rashi explains why is that. Because if you're bringing it out of the Mizbeach, it should only be proper that you wash it off, make sure, because it's gross always, the stomach or the junk that's in it, so you wash it off. And the Kohen should burn everything on the Mizbeach, except, like we said, the hide of the animal, which is not burnt. It's a burnt offering. It's a burnt offering for the sake of Hashem. Meaning, as Rashi says in the Medrash, that when you shecht it, when you slaughter the animal, you have to have in mind that you're bringing it, why am I slaughtering it? To bring it up as a korban. So you need the intent, even at the time of the shechting, that the person is doing it. 546. Pasuk Tes.
Other things too?
Yes.
Everything?
Yep.
So you eat something, you think you're eating this?
Well, the proper way of serving Hashem is that whatever you do is for the sake of serving Hashem. Now,
I didn't hear the question.
The question was, is that applied to everything you do in life? Should you do it for Hashem? The answer is yes. Whatever we do, we should be doing. That doesn't mean a whole day you have to say, I'm doing it for Hashem. But the attitude of the person is, why am I working? To make a living, to be able to live like a Jew. Why am I doing this? Because I want to, you know, be a proper Jew. Now, the Pasuk says, how do you close the door without even knowing if it's cold in here?
I closed half of it for the women. How do you know what women want to do?
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Okay, now the hiktir is translated, it should go up in smoke. Okay? Vihiktir means you should burn it on the mizbeach. The word vihiktir is really a funny word. If you want to speak burning, you say saraf. It's burned. What is this expression of hiktir? Okay? We have it many times. Davening, teres, hiktir olea chalvaya shlomim. You know, what is it hiktir? So they bring down a few interesting things. The real word for burning is saraf, not hiktir.
Maybe it has a bit of smoke.
So 1 second. Meaning like this. The Radak, he brings on the bottom. The Radak and Ibn Ezra learn that the hikta is the column of smoke. Meaning, what does it mean that the column of smoke? The Karbonis actually went up, you know, on the Mizbech, straight up to Hashem. So it's like a column of smoke, meaning the Karbonis went Eloreach Nechayach Hashem. That's one interpretation. He brings on another interpretation. According to Unkelis, v'yaseik, Unkelis defines the word v'hikter as v'yaseik, means it goes up. Meaning, it goes up on the Mizbeach, so that's why he uses the word v'hikter. Rabbeinu Bachaya, or Bachi, whichever way you pronounce his name, says another remarkable word, why it's called v'hikter. In Aramaic, Shin and Tes are interchangeable. Between Hebrew and Aramaic. Shin and Tes are interchangeable. The word Ktira or Kater in Aramaic is also defined as the word Kesher. Rashbi said when he was dying, Becha Ktira is Katarna. With one knot, I tied myself to you. The word Vihikter, the remarkable concept. Rabbeinu Bachai says, why does it by Korbanis? The Torah uses the word Vihikter instead of Sreifa. Because Hikter symbolizes the Jew becoming one with Hashem through the Korban. And like we said, why is it called Korban? From the word Karov. A person becomes close with Hashem. So this creates actually a bond between the person and Hashem. And he says that's why. Doesn't work?
Thank you very much.
So that vihikta is the concept of actually becoming not one thing with Hashem. Okay, Reach Nechayach Hashem we discussed already many, many times. But it's interesting, the Mefarshim bring down that this is connected to the Haftarah we just read on Shabbos in the story of Shaul HaMelech with Shmuel, when he, you know, the nation of Amalek, and that whole thing. And Shmuel said to him, listening is better than any sacrifice that you're going to bring. So what's the whole concept of a korban? The concept of a sacrifice is listening and doing what Hashem wants us to do. That's the whole concept. That's what it's also vehikted, the ketaris, the connection and the bond. Okay, this is the first type of korban elam, which is, as the Pasuk says, if you bring it min ha-bokar. Okay? Now the Pasuk says, me'elo korbanah min ha-bokar. Until now we're speaking about bringing a big animal as a korban elam.
What is korban elam? It's not sin offering, or it is part of sin offering as a general, but what's korban elam?
This basically was, as Rashi says, donation. Nedava. Guy decided he wants to bring a donation to that Hashem. There's another type of Eila, which was after somebody sinned, sometimes they brought a donation korban, not a chatas or an asham. They were bringing, the guy did something wrong. They didn't keep a positive mitzvah.
He dropped off his tefillin.
Whatever. It was to create, as in fact the Gemara in Zvachim says, and the Alter Rebbe brings it down in Tanya, that if I get into a fight with you, and we get into a fight, and I ask you forgiveness, and you forgive me, the relationship is not the same as it was before the sin, before the fight. So how do you recreate the relationship that it should be like it was before? So the Gemara says you send a present. Now the present is not the mechila, it's not the forgiveness, it's post-forgiveness. Okay? Like it's brought down when somebody even brought a korban chatos, a korban osham, okay, that had to be vizvados chatosim. They had to confess the sin. The korban is not the tshuva. The tshuva is actually the vidui, the confession of the sin and regret of what the person. That's the tshuva. The korban actually is a gift to Hashem, so to speak, to recreate the relationship with Hashem that you had before you sinned. So Eila could be, for many different reasons. Right now, these psukim, Rashi says, is speaking about Teres Nedavim. Okay? Now, there are bigger karbanis, and smaller, medium karbanis, and lesser karbanis, and poor man's karban. Now we're going to learn psukim that deal with four types of karbanis. There's a bakar, which is a big animal like a bull, a cow, you know, a kosher animal like that. Then there was sheep. Then the Torah is going to discuss birds. Then the Torah is going to discuss flower offering. These are all different types of korbanos. Now, if somebody was wealthier, they were able to bring a big one. Less wealthy, smaller, well, the poor man brought a little bit of flour. And as we know, if a rich man bring a poor man's korban, the Gemara said, you didn't fulfill your obligation. If a poor man brought a rich man's korban, then it was great. It's even higher. Yeah. But we'll see, there's a positive, I mean, Rashi quotes it from the Medrash, by the flower offering, the Torah is going to use the word in Perek Beis, v'nefesh ki sakriv. It says a soul will bring the flower offering. By the other ones, it doesn't say the expression nefesh ki sakriv. Right? So Rashi brings down that when Hashem says, when a poor man gives me the little bit that he brings, it's worth as if he brought himself. Fat Miam Leyes brings down an interesting story. They bring down a story with Agrippus HaMelech.
Jewish or something, right?
Agrippus HaMelech, yeah. Okay. He once wanted to bring 1,000 sacrifices in one day. He's hungry. The king could do whatever Meshigas he wants and get away with it. So he wanted to bring 1,000. He brings down from Vayikra Rabbah. The Medrash in Vayikra says the following. Agrippus wanted to bring 1,000 korbanos in one day. But you know, there's a certain time frame you got to bring it. So Agrippus called in the Kohen Gadol and he said, listen, I'm bringing today 1,000 korbanos. Don't accept korbanos from anybody else. I'm busy the whole day with me. You're going to be busy all day with my korbanos. Okay. So they didn't accept any korbanos. In the middle, an old lady came. So it says, a poor man, and he had two birds. Remember, two birds to bring. So he says to the Kohen, do me a favor, bring these two birds of mine for a carbon. So the Kohen Gadol says, I have to be honest with you. The king commanded me that I'm not allowed to bring anybody else's carbon, only his. So I can't. So the poor man said to him, Adoni HaKohen HaGadol, Dasha Ata Geirim Li Ra G'dayla. You're causing me terrible evil by this. And he said, why? Every day, he says, I go out and I capture four birds. Two for me, two for Hashem. If you don't let me bring these two to Hashem, I'm not going to be able to eat my two. That's the deal. I bring to Hashem two and me two. And I'm not going to be able to eat it, so you're causing very bad, you're taking away my panasa. When the Kohen Gadol heard this, he brought the carbon. He brought the poor man's birds. Agrippus heard about it, and he said, what did he hear? He heard in a cholim, the Medrash says, in a dream, that in the heavens they said to him in his dream, carbon ha'ani hiktim is karboncha. The poor man's carbon of two birds was better than your 1,000 karbanis. So he found out that they brought a carbon without his order. So he called him the Kohen Gadol, and he said to him, didn't I tell you not to bring any karbanis? You know, why did you bring this poor man's carbon? So the Kohen Gadol said to him, Emes kachzi visani, you so commanded me, but a poor man came and he said, every day, you know, the four karbanis. So the king said to him, Yafa Asisa, said the king getting angry. The king said to him, to the Kohen Gadol, you're right. because his korban is taka holier than mine.
Beautiful.
No, it's a beautiful story because that's what the pasuk says. Nefesh ki sakru, when a poor man brings it, it's like they're giving. You know, it's brought down in Sfarim from all the walls of the base of the Har HaBayis. What do we have now? The holiest place, Kesel Maravi. It says why? What miracle happened that the Kesel Maravi lasted through all the destructions and everything? I didn't see it, but it was brought down in Sfarim because the Kesel Maravi was built by the poor Jews. And they schlepped the stones themselves. They didn't have servants doing everything. They schlepped it themselves and they did it with their full heart. You know, not the rich people order the contractors to do it for them. They brought it themselves and they built it themselves. And because of that, Hashem said, that will never become destroyed. Because if the people do it with their full heart, that by Hashem is worth more than all the 1,000 korbanos that Agrifas was going to bring. It's a remarkable thing. Okay. Agrifas, I don't know if it's the Greek name, but it's a Jewish king. Okay, Pasuk Yud. What happens if he brings it from the sheep? If he brings it from the sheep or from the goats, Zachar tamim yakivenu, it has to be a male korban. Okay? Just like the buck, just like the cattle have to be male, this also had to be a male korban.
Can I just ask one question?
Yeah.
Even though we understand the meaning to be different, why is it always rendered as a satisfying aroma to Hashem?
We said that they do what Hashem wants us to do.
I know, but there are other ways that you can render it. You could say, you know, a great pleasure to Hashem, you know, blah, blah, blah. Why is the word aroma used?
The reason is probably because the Gemara says, reyach, smell, aroma, meshivis hanefesh, revives a soul from fainting. You know, if somebody faints, you give them something strong to smell. Mm. Smell arouses, reawakens, revives the neshama. So you're talking spirituality, when you're talking about if Hashem to, they got to, not to, God forbid, wake up, but to reveal himself more, you know, to come out of his galus, so to speak. So that's the expression of aroma.
But is there something that was more in the vernacular back then that people understood it more differently than we do?
I'm sure they understood it much better than we do, that's for sure. That's not saying too much.
But we don't sacrifice to understand.
What?
We don't sacrifice like before to understand. We don't have the same...
We sacrifice, we're supposed to sacrifice ourselves.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
There's no smell that
comes. Now, the Abarbanel explains why are these things mentioned in different chapters, different paragraphs? To teach us that if you could bring a bull, you can't bring a sheep. If you can bring a sheep, you shouldn't bring a bird. In other words, the Torah says you have to be able to bring what you want to bring. And there's another thing Rashi says over here, which is another interesting concept. Why did Hashem make separate paragraphs? Like over here, why did Hashem make separate paragraphs? So Rashi says that Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu a chance to rethink and digest what he's being told. Tinevach bein parsha leparsha, Hashem gives a revach, a space between parsha and parsha, for Moshe Rabbeinu to be able to digest what Hashem tells us. And it says you can imagine he had a great teacher, Kadosh Baruch Hu. He was a great student, Moshe Rabbeinu. And yet Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu time to rethink and digest the information. So it says, how much more so in regular teachers and regular students do you need space between lessons, so to speak, that people should be able to digest what they're doing?
Longer lunchtime?
Longer recess. Okay. Okay, so what do you do? V'shachat oisei, again you shecht it, and again, over here the Torah doesn't say the kayanim shecht it, because like we learn shechita is ksheda, even with a person who's not a kayan. V'shachat oisei yarecham mizbech tzefein lefnei Hashem, it had to be shechted in the northern part, the northern side of the mizbeach, before Hashem. V'zorku b'nei adin hakayanim ezdomei ala mizbeach, they squirted the blood on the mizbeach, saviv around it. Now the Gemara also learns out the Torah, when the Torah says vizarku is plural, they should throw. Okay, so it was very interesting. It was shtayim shehin arba. Okay, because the expression is that they did it around the mizbeach saviv, round. Okay, which means as follows: in the corner of the mizbeach, okay, the mizbeach was square, right? So the kohanim squirted in this corner, so the blood went on both sides. One squirt got the blood by hitting the corner. They needed good aim. When they hit the corner, the blood went automatically on both sides. And then they did the same thing on the other corner. So they did two squirts of blood, but it actually went on all four sides of the mizbeach. That's why saviv means it actually was all around, because it was on all four sides through the two squirtings that they did. What's called shtayim shein arba, two, which is really four. Okay. Again, it's the same thing basically with the calf, with the bucket, with the cattle, but this is with the whatchamacallit, with a sheep. The heads and the fats. The kain organized it on the wood, which was on the mizbeach. Again, this is the same din. And this is why the Mefarshim explained the Torah could have put Bakr and Sain is really the same exact dinim. The Torah could have made one paragraph out of both, because it's exactly the same din. The Bakr din and the calf and the lamb din, the sheep din, is exactly the same din. So the Torah could have said, if you bring from Bakr or Sain, this and this is the halacha. Why does the Torah make this Bakr and this paragraph Tzayin when it's repeating exactly the same dinim? So this is what the Barbanel says, because we want to show that if you're able to bring a Bakr, if you're able to bring a larger carbon, you shouldn't bring a sheep. If you're able to bring a sheep, you shouldn't bring a bird.
How do you apply it today? It's only when you sacrifice the yourself, or it's according to like the standard?
In simple English?
No, in complicated.
No. Then I have to say it in French. It means very simple. If an eighth grader, it's a general statement for everything, I'll explain the thing. If an eighth grader does third grade work, he didn't fulfill his obligation. Uh-huh. If a third grader does third grade work, he did well. Uh-huh. Okay? If a person is able to give more tzedakah and they didn't fulfill their obligation. Mm-hmm. If a person is able to learn more than they do, daven more than they do better mitzvahs than what they do, they did not fulfill their obligation. Mm-hmm. Like the Gemara says, Asher shehikrev karban ani, we just mentioned, a rich man who brings a poor man's karban, is not fulfilled, did not fulfill his obligation. The Gemara in the Nedarim uses the expression, ein ani ele bedas, Ve'ein asher el bedas. Ani and asher does not only mean wealth and poverty in a physical sense. There's a concept of das. Das is understanding, maturity. You have wealth and maturity, and you have poverty and immaturity. Okay? So a person who is more mature, meaning he's able to do more, does less, they did not fulfill their obligation of what they should be doing in serving Hashem. So in the practical life, in daily life, this is extremely important. If you're able to bring a bakar, and you bring a tzayin, even though you're coming along and say, look Hashem, I'm bringing you a beautiful animal, you know, and I'm better than the guy that brought the bird, and definitely better than the guy that brought the flower offering. But look, I'm bringing a sheep. Yeah? Hashem says to him, yeah, that's only good for a guy that could bring a sheep. A guy that could bring cattle and brings a sheep did not fulfill his obligation.
We go back to the story of Cain and Abel.
Right. Mm-hmm. That caused murder, by the way.
So is there a formula to figure out? For example, in the morning, let's say a person comes to a 6 a.m. minyan, and they know they have to be at work at 9, and they stay here until 8:30 in Davin.
Let's not overdo it.
I'm saying, how is a person supposed to determine?
How do you know your limits?
You know.
That's what the 6 o'clock minute is.
for the slow down.
Sometimes, if a person pushes themselves too much, I'm going to use extreme expressions, but you'll get the picture clearer that way. If a person pushes themselves to the limits, sometimes he gets what's called a nervous breakdown. And then you end up not only not doing what you're supposed to be doing, you end up doing less than what you should be doing. Mm-hmm. Okay? Sometimes people rush and become super religious overnight. Let's not discuss this. The people that become super... He pointed to himself. I didn't do anything.
I didn't point to myself. I just had questions about it.
Okay. Whatever. The bottom line is, a person that becomes super religious overnight will become non-religious overnight too. Okay? Now, a person has to know... You know, in parenting, it's the same thing. You have to know how to pull the string tight... in discipline, but if you pull it too tight, it breaks, and then you're left without a string. You know what I mean? The trick of teaching, you know, disciplining kids in class or at home or whatever it is, the trick is how to pull the string, but not too tight. Okay? People have to know how far they should go, how fast they should go, and that's why the Torah says, "Asei lecha rav." You need a rav, a mashpia, a mentor, a guide, to be able to tell you, cool down, hold it, you know. We mentioned in the past, there's a story, the Alter Rebbe had a chassid, who had a son that turned off from Yiddishkeit. But not only did he turn off from Yiddishkeit, he turned way off from Yiddishkeit. And the father came to the Alter Rebbe and said, "Rebbe, I don't know what to do, help me." So the father said, the Alter Rebbe said to the father, "You know what, get the kid to come see me. Get him, I'll talk to him." See, he wasn't from anybody, but he still respected the Alter Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe wanted to see him. He came to the Alter Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe said to him, "Let me ask you a question. I understand you went way off, but why did you have to go way off?" He said, "Rebbe, let me explain it to you. There's a fast horse and a slow horse. When they're going on a regular path, it's okay. But when they get lost, they make a wrong turn. So a faster horse gets more lost than a slow horse because he's going faster in the wrong direction." So he said, "Rebbe, I am a fast horse. So when I went off, I went..."
"I'll do it."
So the Alter Rebbe said, "You're right, but you have to keep another thing in mind. That when they realize they're lost and they turn around and come back, the fast horse comes back quicker than the slow horse." Mm-hmm. So the Alter Rebbe said to him, "If you're a fast horse..." And he became a Baal Tshuva. He came back taken. You know, there's fast and slow. You got to know how to balance. Mm-hmm. And that's why a person can't make those decisions on their own. They need an outsider who's competent to be able to make those decisions. That's all. Okay. Pasuk Yudalit. Now we're going to the next. These two are basically the same Bakr and Say. Now it goes to the bird, which is different. What happens if he brings a carbon from a bird? And it doesn't say, ha'if ayla. The pasuk doesn't say, if a bird is your carbon. Min ha'if means, not all birds are kosher. Okay? Now, if you notice, by tzein and bakar, the Torah says, zachar tamim yakrivenu. The Gemara learns out from the Pasuk. By Bakar and Sein, if you see in Pasuk Yud, and earlier than that, by Bakar, the Torah uses the word Tamim. Tamim means no blemishes. No blemishes. Any blemish is not kosher. By bird, the Torah doesn't say Tamim. And therefore, the Gemara learns out that if a bird has a blemish, it's still kosher. Why does the Torah then say Min Ha'if? From the birds, which implies not all birds are kosher. So the Gemara learns out, the Rashi brings it down, that if it's missing an entire limb, then it's no good. But a blemish itself is not a problem. It has to be missing an entire limb to be disqualified from the carbon. So what do you have to bring from? Minatayim and min b'nei ayenes carbon. Either from turtle doves or young doves. And the difference is, the age. meaning like this. Turtle doves are only when they're mature, and the young doves, b'nei yayna, are when they're during when they're much younger in age. So there's an age difference.
Is a pigeon a qualifier or not?
Pigeons, here the Torah says it has to be from Tatum or B'nai Yena. But a pigeon many times could be brought up to carbon, but not as an oila. Pigeon, by the way, is a kosher bird.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how the meat tastes.
Yena is not a pigeon.
Yena is a dove.
What's the difference?
I don't know.
A pigeon to a dove?
No, there is a difference.
I don't think it's the same thing.
No, it's not.
Same pigeon, family, but not same.
Same family. It's called the bird family.
Animals.
Their last name is bird. What is pigeon bird, dove bird, all the same mishpacha, cousins. Okay. V'kriva kayin. What?
I said in America people don't eat birds. Very few.
Other than chicken and turkey.
No, I'm not. Besides chicken and turkey.
To do, not everybody ate turkey either.
Here?
The mashal, the yamsha shleim, chachma shleima, who lived in the time of the Beis Yosef, maintained that the turkey is not a kosher bird. Mm-hmm. And his descendants, some of his descendants, have a minig that they taka don't eat it.
But not birds. Birds, it's okay.
Birds, listen, by animals, it's chewing the cud and split hoofs. Yeah, maligaden, okay. By fish, it's scales and fins and scales. By birds, there's no simen that the Torah gives. And therefore it's brought down in halacha that birds are eaten what's called b'kabbalah, tradition. What traditionally was known to be eaten, it's like the Sfardim, the Moroccans, eat grasshoppers. Chocolate covered. They do. It's a delicacy in Morocco. But they know which grasshoppers are good, which grasshoppers are not kosher, and they have tradition and only they could do it.
Like eagles?
No.
Vulture
or not vulture?
They're specified.
Animals, the cloud, it says that birds that are toitif, birds that of prey. Right. Okay, but we're not learning now. We'll get to Shemini. We'll learn about the kosher birds in a few years. Okay. V'kriva kain al mizbeach. The kain will bring it to the mizbeach. Now, this is an interesting thing. Umalakas reishi. There's no shechita by birds in the Beis HaMikdash. Shechita is not about eating. You want to eat a bird, you have to shecht it. In the Beis HaMikdash, they did what was called Malika. Malika was as follows. The Kohen had a very sharpened thumbnail. By the way, Me'ilim also have one nail which is very sharp in order to do the Priya. But they had the Kohen would have a very sharp thumbnail that mamish that it had a point to it that it'd be able to cut. He presses into the back of the bird's neck, cuts through the bone, and severs the gullet and windpipe. In other words, they did, you're not supposed to show it on yourself, but they did it from the back. Shechita is always from the front. This guy with his nail, and this would not be a kosher shechita. If somebody did this on a regular bird to eat, you would be eating treif. But Malika is, and this is all the birds in the Beis HaMikdash for the Kabbanis, only this is Gzeres HaKosuv. They did it in a way that they actually, with the sharp nail, they went through the back, and they cut it in, and they cut the bone and severed the gullet and the windpipe. The two simonim that you have to shecht.
Leaving the head on.
One second, we'll soon see. We'll
right
soon.
Right hand,
we have to be right-handed, because a left-handed Kohen was not allowed to work in the Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah, but you still can be right-handed Kohen and be able to do it with your left hand.
Ambidextrous. No, they had it on the right hand, but Pashtus, they did Daveda with the right hand. No, Daveda had to be done with the right, but whatever they did with one hand had to be done with the right hand.
But it does say nip the head off.
Yeah, well.
Or nip its head.
Nip its head.
Does that mean off? Or just
we'll soon see. Okay, we'll soon see what it means.
What's wrong with lefties? Why can you lefty work this?
Lefties, some of my best friends and relatives are lefties.
No, I'm saying so. Why can't
the family?
It's Exeris Akasa. The Torah says it was considered a blemish for a Kohen.
So that means if you're ambidextrous, you'd be considered sort of left hand, so you also.
No, ambidextrous was able to work in a Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Vihikdir. Vihikdir Mizbech of a Nimtza Domei, and you pressed out the blood al kid ha-mizbeach, on the wall of the mizbeach.
Squeeze it?
Huh?
Press out the blood. They squeezed the bird's body or something?
Yeah. They squeezed it out.
But
the benefit of my friend on the other side of the room.
For vegetarian people, this is a pleasure.
I'm asking you questions on verbiage disagreement. No, not really. I thought at you after I asked the question.
Okay, just don't do Malika to her, that's all. Okay, the name's Saddam and you squeeze out the blood of Kira Mizbeach on the walls of the Mizbeach. Now, there's one more interesting thing I should have mentioned before. There's a very interesting Ramban. It's a very long Ramban. It's like 2 pages Ramban. But he quotes the Rambam's Meir Nevuchim. He quotes the Rambam's Meir Nevuchim, the guide, the famous Rambam. All about Korbanos is to get rid of the idol worshipping, work that the worship that people used to do. But he says, in the middle of this whole thing, he says a very interesting thing. He says, V'chalila shleiyabem shum te'elis v'ratzen. He says, Rambam writes, in Meir Nevuchim, Ramban quotes it, you can't say that the purpose of a korban is only to undo, to exclude idol worshipping. Because you can't say a korban doesn't have anything positive within itself. Okay? He says, it's not only to be shoylel, to exclude and denounce the idol worshipping. He says like this. They said to exclude the Dasa Shaitim. Okay.
But it wouldn't make sense that we'd have another Beis HaMikdash coming if that was the case.
So he says, here, V'roi l'shmei atam, ki bavo shemais b'nei adam, the Ramban brings on like this. I don't know if this is still the quote of the Meir Nevuchim, he says it himself. He says, the purpose of a korban is to elevate the thought, speech, and action of a person. Because everything is thought, speech, and action. He says, the action of a person is done with machshava dibra maisa. Tziva Hashem ki kasha yechta v'yavi korban, when you sin. In other words, when a person sins, they sin in thought, speech, and action. So how do you rectify the situation? So he says like this. The Torah says you have to do smicha. V'samach yodei. You have to actually put both hands, you have to lean on the carbon. That's the action. He says, the dibur is v'yisvada, you have to confess. When you brought the carbon, v'yisvada is chatasim, you have to confess the sin. And he said, the burning of the fire, of the stomach and the kidneys, that is the klei ha-machshava, the thought process, because the Gemara says kidneys. The question what it means, but the Gemara says Kloyus Yoyatzes, the kidneys make you smart. The kidneys give you Eitza. Va'taiva and the Machtaiva, and he says the Kedaayim, the hands and the feet of the animal corresponds with the hands and the feet of the person who does all the things, and the squirting of the blood on the Mizbeach is the blood of the person. That the person should think that really it should be happening to me, but instead I'm giving the blood of the animal to Hashem. So no, it's a very remarkable concept. The whole concept of a korban, in a practical sense, is to elevate and refine the thought, speech, and action of a person, and the temptations and everything else.
Don't you think it's more refined to do it like we do it today through the prayers and the lamentation or whatever, or bidui, or... I mean, you don't have to take a blood animal and throw it into the wall to heal.
Take your car and give it away. See which is more effective.
Well, I did it. How do you know I didn't do it? So,
take your children and
throw it out. No. Why did Hashem... Because... Hashem wants the physical action. Physical animal represents our physical animal.
So why don't we do it today? Still today?
Because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash.
I understand, but if it's so important for us to grow...
Because now we're in Golus. And Hashem says, when you're in Golus, you don't have a Beis HaMikdash. Very simple.
So it's easier to be in Golus than when...
Easier to be in Golus? I doubt it.
No, I mean... Because of the sacrifice that we don't have to do, because this is very hard.
Yeah, but we got no choice.
Can you go back to
what?
that one opinion or one thing that was written was that the carbon was to remove from us having done idol worship.
Correct. Because that's what the people used to do for the idols.
But when you're saying it's also to refine, isn't that, in a manner of speaking, saying to remove the idol worship or the inclination for idol worship in the future? So there's still that connection between the two.
There is sumira and there's asetev. There's turning away from evil, and there's doing good. Turning away from evil is not enough. Doing good without turning away from evil is also no good. I mean, to give you an example, if you're full of mud and you want to put on clean clothing to go to the wedding, it doesn't work. Just turning away from evil, you still need positive actions to connect. There's disconnecting. In other words, negative sins. One thing, if somebody actively does a sin, meaning they transgress a negative commandment, that disconnects them from Hashem. So they need to get rid of the disconnection. You still need the connection, though.
But what I'm saying is that the purpose, it leads to the other anyway, no matter what.
Not necessarily.
I mean, if you're going to remove from having done idol worship, you also have to remove the inclination to do it in the future, which is refining yourself.
But you didn't do it yet in the future.
No, but you have to refine yourself so you won't have...
The refining is getting clean. The cleaning. But that doesn't mean you have good deeds with you. In fact, there's a famous question the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah about this guy, Rabbi Elazar ben Dodaya, that he did tshuva, you know, and the voice came out. So... In Chassidus, there's a question that got rid of the negativity, but he didn't do any positive mitzvahs. How do you go to the Gan Eden without positive mitzvahs? And they answer, he did such a level of truth that the negative became positive, so the positive were there, you know. But it's a carbon is two things, and that's why God gave us. We learned in the past, why did God give us negative commandments and positive commandments? Why isn't one of the two enough? And also, why did God give us 248 positive mitzvahs? 245 isn't enough? 202? 150? 5? 248. I know a guy has a license plate, 248. But I'm saying, why should somebody have 248 positive mitzvahs? What's wrong with 10, 15, 20? And why is there negative and positive?
Negative and positive because you have to know how to expand and contract your inclinations or your desires or whatever.
No, but it's...
When it's appropriate to do...
Yeah, but it's more than that. But it's more than that. Yeah, it's true. It's still more than that. Hashem wants to exist in the world. Correct? Dira v'tachtayim. Okay, that's the Medrash says. Hashem wanted a dira b'tachtonim, a dwelling place in Zav HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem wanted a dwelling place down here. Now, in order to have a dwelling place, you need to do two things. You need to get rid of the evil that blocks godliness, and you do good, which means as follows. Why did Hashem make evil in the world? He shouldn't have created any evil. Because good can't be good if there's no choice to do evil. Then you're an angel. This program to do good, you do good, big deal. It's worthless. It's really worthless. The whole thing is, you have an ability to do bad. And then when you choose, instead of doing bad, to do good, so that's a great accomplishment. So Hashem created evil in the world as a means to an end. Okay? As a means to an end. Now, Hashem said, listen, that evil is there just for you to have a choice to do good. But I don't want you to strengthen it. Because when you strengthen evil, that allows good to become weaker. And God can't exist in a world where evil is strong. Okay. Therefore, God says, there's 365 levels of evil in the world, which are the 367 negative commandments. And God says, let's say, don't eat treif. Okay? When you don't eat treif, you don't bring more godliness into the world. Mm-hmm. One second. You don't bring more godliness into the world when you don't eat treif. Mm-hmm. What? Why? If I don't eat treif, all I'm not doing is, if I eat treif, I'm strengthening treif. I'm strengthening evil. If you strengthen evil, that combats godliness. That's why, like we learned in the past, why is there no bracha in a negative mitzvah? There is no bracha for any negative mitzvah. If a person is about to speak Lashon Hara, okay? And you don't. You don't make a shiksha, oh, let me make a bracha, shiksha, mitzvah, svanu, shaloy ladaber Lashon Hara. Or a guy wants to eat a piece of treifas food.
Because it would be exhausting.
You can make one bracha for the whole day. Like Birchas HaTeira, we say for the whole. But there's no bracha, asher kitshanu b'mitzveis v'tzivanu, shaloy eat treif, shaloy lechol tarfas, whatever it is, shaloy lechol chazir. There is no bracha for negative mitzvahs. Why not? Because by not eating chazir, you don't bring kedusha into the world. The bracha shekidshanu b'mitzvah means we bring kedusha into the world by doing a mitzvah. When you don't eat chazir, there is no kedusha coming into the world. What you're doing is you're not strengthening evil. If evil is not fed, it keeps getting weaker and weaker and weaker. Okay? Now Hashem says, in addition to that, I want Asay Toiv. I want 248 positive mitzvahs. Why are there 248 positive mitzvahs?
Why are there less?
Because there's 248 different ways of revealing godliness in the world. That's why there's 248 mitzvahs. There's 248 that each mitzvah has a certain unique revelation of godliness that no other mitzvah has. What happens when a person puts on tefillin or they eat matzah or whatever the mitzvah may be? That action is bringing kedusha into the world. Okay? When you don't eat chazer, you don't bring kedusha into the world. Okay? What you don't do is you don't strengthen evil. So you can't make a bracha on that. The bracha shekidshan b'mitzvayis v'tzivanu is we bring down active acts, bring down the fear and the kedusha of godliness into the world. And that's why it explains, why the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, it's brought down in Sforim also. Love is the source of all positive mitzvahs, and fear is the source of all negative mitzvahs. Why? When you love somebody, you want to be connected to them. Correct? You want to be connected to them. You don't connect yourself by not doing something. You connect yourself by doing something. Mm-hmm. So if you love somebody, you want to do something for them. Because the action brings you closer. Mm-hmm. Fear is a negative commandment. The source of negative commandments. Why don't I eat chazer? Because I am awe of God's greatness. I don't want to make him disappear from the world by eating chazer and strengthening evil. And we mentioned this morning also. If you notice, there's a mitzvah in the Torah, kavodes avicha v'simecha, honor your father and mother. And there's a mitzvah, fear your father and mother. Ishi mevav v'tiro. So halacha says, what is honor? Feed them, clothe them, things like that. Okay? What is fearing parents? Since you look in Shekhinah, what is it, fearing parents? Don't sit in their seat. Don't contradict their words. Don't. It's the don'ts. Because when you have the awesomeness of the king, let's say, then you don't want to rebel against them by actively doing something that he doesn't want you to do. Love is a tuner. If you love somebody, it's not you don't want to do something that's going to upset them. You want more so, you want to do something which brings you closer. And after the whole, I don't know how we got into this, but you asked a question about something.
Then how is it the commandment of hearing Hashem is supposed to bring us to loving Hashem?
Because in the fear of the awesomeness of Hashem, and then you realize that awesomeness of Hashem you could get by doing a mitzvah, that causes the love.
There's only 248, there's no other...
But there's rabbinic, there's branches, but no, 248 positive mitzvahs.
Why are there less positive than there are
negative? Because there's one thing as the power of evil, and one has the power of Kedusha. There's different amounts. Why do you think a person is born with 365 veins and 248 limbs? Because that's how many mitzvahs there are in a spiritual sense. And they're called Eivarim de Malka, the limbs of Hashem.
Yeah, the only reason I'm asking is because originally you said that God can't dwell in a world where there's more evil than there is good.
But evil, so God can't... Was
why
it?
Do we get more
Let me clarify what you're saying. One second. God can't live in a world where evil is strengthened by us.
Right.
The evil that God put into the world, He can handle.
Okay.
When we strengthen the evil by doing it, we take our godly power and feed the evil with it. That's what God... That's what throws God out, so to speak.
Right, but I got the impression from you that when the amount of evil is greater than the amount of good...
It is, because 365 is more than 248.
Mm-hmm. Don't you see it in the world?
There's more darkness than light.
Exactly.
But one light dispels a lot of darkness. You know what I'm saying? Can we go back what?
To the head of the burn. You never answered the question.
About taking it off the pin.
I think in this, by the back it says Layavda. Maybe they do take off that. I don't know. Maybe they did. No, that's at the end. I don't know. Okay. Then it says okay, Vehesid Pasik Tazayin. Pasik 16. Vehesid es Murasei Beneitzasa. You take off the crop with its feathers. What's the crop? That's near the bird's gullet where the food is partially digested. And that you have to take off together with the stomach, and you put it on the altar near the east side of the altar where the ashes were. Meaning, the crop of the bird, which is the mouth which has partially digested food, and the stomach of the bird, that you don't bring on the Mizbeach. So the Mefarshim explain why not. So Rashi says, from the Medrash, because birds fly around and eat everybody else's things. Birds eat stolen food. Animals are fed by the masters, by the owners, so they don't get stolen food. You hope. Birds fly around. Hashem says, listen, I don't want amay mizbeach stolen goods. It's very interesting. Hashem says, I don't want amay mizbeach. So even though it's a carbon oila, that the whole thing is burnt, but Rashi says, here. They bring it from Rashi. Rashi does say the expression, Shenizim in a gezel. Rashi says, because the birds come in Pasuk Tazayin, at the end of the Rashi ben Itasa, says, Ba'ayv Shenizim in a gezel, Hashem says that, throw out. Meaning by a bird, by an animal, by the sheep and by the cattle, Hashem says, wash it, you know, clean it out, and bring it on the Mizbeach. Because they don't eat stolen goods. But the bird, Hashem says, just take it and throw it out. I don't want to have anything to do with it. Okay?